Good afternoon. I'm looking around, just want to ask, and this is not to make anybody feel bad, but just to help Sarah particularly. Is anybody here this afternoon that hasn't been at either yesterday morning or this morning? Okay, it's helpful to know that. So you might, that's great, and it's lovely to see you, but it's just kind of helpful to know, because some of the stuff follows on from this morning. My name's, for those of you who weren't here this morning, my name's Graham Thompson. I work with the Council for Congregational Life and Witness, and it's my pleasure to introduce Sarah, who has been working with this stuff, has done a three-year doctoral research looking at the impact of parents' faith on their children, and you will touch on some of that again, but I'm not going to say anything else other than just to pray now and hand over. So let's just pray. Well, thank you for this place and this time, and for the ways you've been blessing us through so many people who have so much to share. And help us to process that and to knit it together, and may your Spirit help us as we take it home and apply it. And we thank you for this session when we think very practically about how we equip Christian parents, Christian families, for passing on faith at home. Thank you for Sarah and for the thinking and the teaching and the reflection and the research that she's done on this. And please use her to bless us and encourage us as we think about how we as congregations can equip parents in this way. So may this time be fruitful for your kingdom and for the upbuilding of young souls, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Great, thank you, and it's good to be here. So just for those who I haven't met before, I'm Sarah, so I'm from near Liverpool, but I do have Irish connections, I was saying that. My mum's from Donaghadee, and we've got a few extended family around, so it's really a privilege to be with you. And this whole topic of sharing faith with children in the home, this faith transmission in the home context, has really just been on my heart for many, many years now. I used to work as a children and family worker in a church, and then I stopped when I had my own kids. And now I'm working in a university teaching early childhood, but also part of my time I have the great privilege to be researching children's faith. So the secular university is paying for that, which is really exciting. And just this thing of how can we, as churches, how can we equip and support and empower families in passing on the faith, but also how can we as churches work in partnership with parents in that. So that's my heart and a lot of what we talked about this morning. Oh, do you have the clicker by any chance? So we talked, just a little brief recap of this morning as well as we sort of go through. So this morning we were looking very much at kind of the background, why this is important, an important area, looking at some of the Bible passages based on that and so on. So we looked, this afternoon we'll be looking a lot more specific examples and practical ideas of how we can equip parents. So this morning was more kind of looking at a congregation, church kind of level. This afternoon we'll be kind of focusing on how we can equip parents and families themselves. Wonderful, thank you. So Deuteronomy, we looked at this passage, all about passing on faith in everyday life. And that thing about repeating again and again God's teaching. And when I was doing, we'll come back to that in a minute. When I was doing my research, I went to families and I wanted to find out these four areas that often we would think of as kind of ways of passing on faith and nurturing faith. I wanted to find out which of these were most effective and how could they be used most effectively in the home context. Well, obviously church attendance isn't the home context, but the act of a family going to church. And so all of the families in the study that I did weren't church attenders, regular church attenders, but they each did slightly different things in the home. So some didn't mention God all week, but went to church regularly. And then there was others who were very, very active in faith activities in the home, and then, of course, some in between and a whole range of things. And what I found was, despite the fact that all the families attended church regularly, the faith of their children was quite different. And I found that faith discussions, in the sort of within the family context, children who talked about, faith being part of not necessarily everyday conversation, but conversations around the house, around their daily living and so on. That seemed to be the most effective and the most influential thing, the thing that marked those children that had quite a more developed faith, let's say. It was more personalised to them, their faith, and it seemed like they understood faith being more relevant to them and so on. So this thing of faith discussions in the home very much was very influential and very key. Bible reading and prayer times together were both significant as well, but not quite as influential as that kind of sense of discussing faith in the home and so on. We also looked this morning at the passage in Joshua where they made a stone memorial to serve as a reminder of what God had done there in that place and at that time. And so I was sort of challenging people and sort of a little thing to remember in our heads, you know, how can we make significant moments, or not make significant moments, that's God's job really, but how can we mark those significant moments? So moments where children perhaps have significant spiritual encounters or significant thoughts, or perhaps we do, how can we mark those things so that we can remind children of them? You know, in years to come, we can say, oh, you know, do you remember when God did this? This is a reminder of that. So that was another thing that we looked at this morning. And very much this thing, that this whole thing of discipling in the home is a partnership. Yes, you know, I do believe parents are the most influential in this sense, but very much we as the church community need to be supporting and partnering with parents in that. So this phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, you know, I so strongly believe that, you know, it takes a church community to effectively pass the faith on to the next generation, to stand with parents and equip and empower them. So very much this community responsibility, we'll just talk a little bit about that. We talked this morning quite a bit about intentionally, actively welcoming and valuing children and families. So I won't say too much more about that. I've heard so many stories, and even yesterday in the afternoon session, people were sharing a few stories, of the value of intergenerational relationships. So one of the families I visited, the mum was, she'd spent many years homeless in London, and had had the children, and she was a single mum, and she'd just kind of got into a home, and she'd just, I think less than a year before I'd visited, become a Christian. And their life was quite different, let's say. and as the children spoke to me about their faith and about their experience of church and who they thought God was and who God was to them and this kind of thing, they kept talking about this Auntie Joan. And they kept saying, you know, Auntie Joan this, and Auntie Joan told us this, and Auntie Joan and Auntie Joan and all this. And when I spoke to the mum at the end, I said, oh, you know, who's Auntie Joan? And she said, oh, she's a lady at the church, you know, or she's so good and she comes around and she helps us. And all. So she wasn't related at all to the family. In fact, the family had no blood relatives, if you like, in the area at all. And yet this Auntie Joan had sort of really taken time and a lot of time to really invest in this family. And you could see the impact it was having on the mum and the children. And this sense of relationships within the church community is such a powerful thing. And in a sense, it's a free thing. You know, we don't have to pay for extra workers. We don't have to buy resources in, all that kind of thing. Actually, we've got people there. So if we as church community can facilitate that and encourage that, of course, we need to be a bit careful with, you know, child protection and all that. But I think people are afraid because of child protection, you know, but that doesn't mean we can't talk to kids, you know, and within our church communities, let's not let that kind of regulations and so on kind of hinder the great thing about intergenerational relationships. So perhaps that's something to go away and think about how in your context that may work, because I think that's a really, really powerful thing. And intentional role models as well. So again, just actively, you know, if we can be sort of active role models within our church communities. And prayer support.
I guess we all kind of could probably vouch for that one. But if families in our midst can genuinely know that they're being prayed for and supported by the congregation at all times, but particularly at tricky times, I think that's very valuable. Practical support, I mentioned this morning, meals. Some churches I know do that. They take meals around to families, perhaps if they've had a baby or if things are a bit tough. But other things, you know, if you can help out with a bit of babysitting or just sort of getting alongside the family and providing practical support, I think that's really a powerful thing. Again, I talked this morning a little bit about discipleship and teaching for parents. So as a church, if we can communicate that we are actively trying to help parents in their own discipleship, as well as their kids, then I think that's a good thing. Activities for kids, many churches do this, Sunday schools, after school groups, that kind of thing. That's something that's really, really valuable and helpful. And using opportunities. Again, I spoke this morning a little bit about perhaps using baptism services or other perhaps festivals or rituals or things that we already have. Trying to just use those to profile and to raise the profile and to remind people about this thing of passing on faith in the home. So thinking about partnership, how do we sort of create a culture and an understanding within our churches of this partnership? I think very much the language that we use, we need to be careful that the language isn't, you know, bring your children to church and we'll sort of teach them in Sunday school for you. You know, that kind of thing doesn't convey a partnership. So if we make sure that we're using language and explaining, very nicely, my church, not to do with me, has recently said we're going to pray for the children as they go out, but we're going to make sure we pray for the parents too, you know, as the kids are going out. So it's a way of remembering to pray for the parents. I thought that's a really good thing because it's kind of showing we're not just taking your kids to give them their spiritual activity for the week and then giving them back, but actually we're seeing this as a whole picture. So I think the language that we're using is really important. And profiling up front. Again, I said this morning, so many church leaders I spoke to said that passing on faith in the home is a really important area and they think it's so valuable, but they kind of weren't talking about it in churches on Sunday. And that wasn't because they didn't want to. It just hadn't happened for some reason. And likewise, I've perhaps sat in churches for many years and we've not really talked about it. And yet, if we can just mention on a Sunday, just occasionally, perhaps once a month, we can have a little higher profile, you know, talk about, here's some ideas of what you could do in the home to develop your child's faith, and that kind of thing. Really raise the profile and mention it, drip it through in little bits around. I think that that really helps to convey the sense that parents, we're with you on this. You know, we care and we're helping and wanting to empower you in this way. Communicating with parents. So I don't know about the kids you've come across, but mine are pretty bad at telling me what they've done that day. So when we come home from church, perhaps they'll say to me, I say, what did you do? And the thing, well, you know, Johnny was telling us about this balloon. Hi. This balloon, and it went round and round and round, and then we squeezed it, and then we played with the balloon, and we did this with it, and there was a ribbon, and blah, blah, blah. They'll tell me all about this, and I'm like, was that like a Bible story? I don't know. You know. And they're not very good at remembering. Then if I said to them, well, it was this, wasn't it? You know, if I actually knew what the story was, if I said, oh, yes, it was this, wasn't it? Like, oh, yes, that's right. And then they'll tell me all about it. But so it's not that they've forgotten. It's not that it's been a wasted experience. But if we can just communicate with parents and say, today in church, you know, give a little handout, this is what we did. Perhaps you could suggest, you know, this week you could talk about how God provides for us or something in your family. Or perhaps you can pray for people in another country or something like this. So just even one sentence, you know, a little thing to hand out, just to kind of communicate that thing that we're together on this. We're not just taking your children to do the spiritual teaching for you, but we're doing this in a partnership sort of way. A safe place for discussion. So when sort of issues come up in family life or when people are struggling with things, if families can feel like this is a safe place to discuss. I'm not talking about, you know, gathering the whole church around and let's all talk about your problems, but, you know, fostering that culture that it's okay to be honest and open and to have sort of issues, and let's talk about that. And if we can't provide support, then providing signposting, you know, where could people go for that sort of support? I think suggesting ideas to people. I keep talking about a notice sheet, but maybe these days you have like an email each week. We've just started doing that to the congregation. And perhaps on that, just a little idea. Oh, this is a great book we heard about. You might want to look this up. Or how about this week you could, think about pick an item in the news and perhaps you could pray for it as a family or something like this. So just suggesting little very easy ideas, but things that perhaps people wouldn't necessarily think about if they didn't have it jogged in that way. Another thing is perhaps reading a book together. We've got lots of books we're going to be talking about a bit later. Perhaps there's something here you could suggest. You know, what one that we'll be talking about a bit later is this one, which is about family worship. It's lots of stories about how families do family worship in different ways. Perhaps you could sort of suggest that, you know, we'll read that together. You know, anybody in church, let's read it, and perhaps mention it every month, something like that. At Christmas, Graham was telling me about somebody's not here, no? Okay, just before I explain the idea, that somebody else could explain it a little better. And it was an idea of providing Advent activities for families in advance, and sort of why don't you use these different activities at Christmas. I was sort of planning this year on the Sunday, sort of I think the last Sunday in November, I'm hoping to do a little lunch for families after church, and then we'll do a similar thing. We'll make something together. I've got like an Advent stable thing. We'll make the sweet stuff on, which makes it quite appealing. And so it's something they can make together and take away, but they use it every day in Advent. And then we'll talk about a few other activities that the families could use in Advent in terms of discussing faith things and so on. So I think just using those little opportunities to suggest ideas to families. So I thought now it would be really good just to have a little discussion for a few minutes. If there's any good ideas that you've come across, anything you've seen that's worked really well in terms of working in partnership, how we can encourage parents in that way. So just to give you a few minutes for that, to discuss it, and then perhaps have a little bit of feedback if that's the case. Thinking about how we can convey to parents that that we're with them on this, we're together, we're alongside, we're in partnership together. So I'll just give you a few minutes to discuss that in twos and threes around. Is that okay? Great. So sorry to break into your discussions, but if anybody has any things that have worked well, it'd be really good to hear and share the ideas around. What sort of things are you talking about?
We're talking about the things that you have.
Okay.
Things that we have used, mm-hmm. that do work, and other ideas where we maybe think we haven't done well enough, like communicating with the parents to mm-hmm. what the children are doing that particular mm-hmm. day. We've sent worksheets. Mm-hmm. They've taken worksheets home, mm-hmm. but we haven't maybe told parents, mm-hmm. so it's up mm-hmm. to them and the children whether they...
Yeah.
Whether they get any further than the front door. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What were the things you
used
that had been effective?
No, as I was saying, we've let children, you know, given children things. We have encouraged them to continue what they've done in their activity after. So they come in for part of the service and then they have their, mm-hmm. they go out, which is fairly common, I think, now. Mm-hmm. And then send whatever work's not finished or whatever idea or craft, but we haven't told the parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I was telling them that in one of the churches I used to work with before, on the first Sunday before Sunday school started back for the year, they would have invited all the families to come for breakfast before the service started, and they would have had breakfast and they would have told them what the theme for the year was, what sort of a brief summary of what they would be doing, and as well they would have encouraged the families to raise money for a certain project, so they would have told them about that. And I think one of them said something, it did something similar at the end, mm-hmm. and cool. actually would be a good idea to do it at the start and at the end. Mm-hmm. Sort of,
so yeah, that's that's great. And somebody was saying this morning, how do we get people to come to church on time, people with kids? Well, that's a good idea, isn't it? Make breakfast. great, thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. Any other thoughts or ideas?
Something I've just started to do, so I've no idea if it'll actually work well enough with families or not, but I'm trying to do something in each service where the parents can take something away to follow up with their children. So we're planning to work through the Heidelberg Catechism and do a question and answer from it each week, so the parents will hopefully be growing their faith a wee bit, but then there'll be a short memory verse to go with it that the children can be learning, so there'll hopefully be something that hits different age groups, different abilities, and parents can grow while they're helping their children to grow. And so far, my boys like it, no idea if anybody else does, so hopefully see.
Sounds good, yeah. Great, super, thank you for sharing that.
I think it's very important that in the parts of the service that are specifically directed for children, that the whole congregation participates in those, that it's not the children come to the front and answer questions, everybody else sort of sits at it.
Yeah.
We would encourage everybody to be involved. I think that's good, because then they, you know, they realise we're all there.
That's true. Completely. And we could I'm sure we could have a whole session or five on family worship, on worship as a congregation, couldn't we? And it's a real tricky one. You know, personally, I'm not a fan of actions. I know. I mean, I like other people doing them, but I don't like doing them myself. So that's a tricky one. You know, and I personally have always been very aware not to kind of force people to feel they have to do actions. But you're right. You know, if we can have things that we can participate together as a church community, that's really, really great and really important. Yeah, super. And there's other ways to do that, not just actions. Super. Any other thoughts?
One thing that we had done was one thing that I'm really wanting to see over this next while is to see families doing more together at home. So one thing that I'd come across with another friend who's a youth worker was Holy Week boxes. So we tried them this year. But instead of doing them just for the family, we decided to do them for the whole entire congregation. So the idea of the Holy Week box is that every single house got a little small box. It had a little instruction sheet as to what passages to read each day, and it came with little small things. So it had a little wooden peg person, had some coins, had a little piece of cloth, green card, pipe cleaner. I think, was there anything else? So the idea of it was that you just read the Bible passage each day and used the materials inside the box to represent it told you what to do each day. But we thought it was a good one to try because it had a start and an end. It wasn't like you're going to do this for 6 months, it was 6 days. And actually I heard back from a lot of the older members of the congregation as well, really enjoyed it. So in that instance, it wasn't this is just something to do for kids. It was, we decided to actually for the whole entire church. So that was something that we did. And we made them at less than a pound a box for each family. I think it worked out like 82p a box.
Super. Thank you for sharing that. That's great. And that's really great because it is, again, that thing of we're here all together as a church community.
Yeah, and I know as well that our minister actually went out to some families who hadn't been at church for a while and actually kind of handed them a box and said, haven't seen you in a while. You might like this over Easter. We don't know how many people actually used it, but for it to even go into the house and for some of the kids to even open it, so for some parents to even open a Bible, like tiny big steps is progress.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And I think we kind of perhaps assume that kids and families know all about the, you know, that those passages of the Bible. But actually, if we can just raise that profile, maybe they don't. You know, maybe they haven't gone, they wouldn't read it. So things like this that just jog them to do it is fantastic. Yeah, so thank you. You can say.
Well, just one idea and a few add-ons to follow. One was Messy Church. Now, that's something we've tried. It hasn't been a wonderful success, I have to say, but it has worked to an extent in that families were encouraged to come, parents and children, and grandparents and activations they wanted to, and they participated over an hour or so and finished the meal. But it's mostly centered around, first of all, a devotional start, and the minister would take that for a bit. And then they would have maybe some hymn, and then there would become a series of craft sessions, and then they'd finish up with a simple meal, and that brought people together.
Mm-hmm.
But the concluding thought I had, because I didn't quite find one of your ideas all that practical, and that was the idea of somebody in the church sending out emails every week to all the family with the suggestions.
Mm.
I thought probably better follow this suggestion in a slightly different way and have a family evening when family and the kids could be, and then you could structure it in such a way the parents would be taken aside for a little while and given a series of, dare I say, ideas to try out at home, and then you complement that by saying, here's some of the ideas we're going to try when they're in church or whatever, and work your way through from that, rather than sending emails out. I know technology would be quite fashionable, but I don't think it works very well, and you need that sort of personal contact.
Yes. I think you're right. And the thing is, with all of these things, it's working out what works in your context the best, you know. And, you know, I could have something that is absolutely fantastic in my church, and it may not work in anybody else's church, you know. And that's the good thing about this kind of event, is that we can all hear stories and perhaps think, oh, that works kind of in my way, but I can just tailor it somehow in this way. So thanks for that. That's really helpful.
I think if you come to the book, you might appreciate it. I was reading recently that...
Is it about football? No.
Church, the Anglican Church has adopted the messy church concept, and it's been working quite well in lots of congregations.
Yes, I think it's great. And messy church, I think, is primarily an evangelistic sort of thing. Would I be right saying that? Just checking. And I think that's great. And I think this push there's been in terms of... towards evangelism for families is great, but also I'm really keen that in doing that we don't sort of forget the families who are in our churches already, because or sort of loosely connected, and that's why this kind of thing of encouraging families who are already in our midst to try and strengthen them in their faith nurturing and so on in the home. So, but it all works really, really well together. So.
Can I just say, we actually run Messy Church, which has been quite successful, but as you say, it's not primarily our own families that are coming to it. It's 90% outsiders, which is good. But just an advantage One of the things I would just like to share briefly that we do is when we do the crafts first, and when the crafts are finished, they go down to the church for the sing song, etc., and then each of us then would sit at one of the tables, so that when the kids and the families come back in, the conversation is geared towards the theme, and it's not just idle chit chat, which helps just to emphasise the theme for the night and the Bible verse.
Yeah, and again, it's that personal contact, isn't it? You know,
can I just ask about the messy church thing in terms of? I mean, we don't do it in our church, but I've heard about it and sort of wondered about it at times, but just sort of. It's not normally people from your own congregation, but how does that translate then? Is the idea to get them to come to normal morning service, you know, eventually, or how does that?
I think the actual idea behind it is that almost becomes a church service in its own entity.
Right. See, I just wonder about you know, how that.
I know. And again, it's different contexts, isn't it? You know, perhaps that works in some churches, some locations, and not in others, you know. But you know what, we need to do that a whole other thing then about evangelism with families. So, but thank you, that's really great, those thoughts, and hopefully in your little groups you were discussing other things as well. So that's kind of focusing on how we as a church community can be partners in this whole thing of discipleship in the home. Whoops, got my thing upside down. Right, so the next thing I wanted to just kind of flag up was valuing children's faith. And again, I did talk about this a bit this morning. And I read this passage where Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, unless you turn from sins and become like little children, you will never get into the kingdom of heaven." And in this scene, we see that Jesus is valuing something of the faith of a child. And
And I've kind of, some of the families that I spoke to conveyed this sort of idea that, well, you know, we're sort of just filling in time and we'll do a little bit of this and that. And then when they're about 11 or 12, we can really do the serious kind of discipleship stuff. And we can, you know, really try and convert them and so on. And then, but in the same conversation, they were saying to me, but you know what, we kind of, kids don't really want to come to church anymore. And they don't want to talk about God and they don't really know what's going on. And it was very clear to me that for families who were sort of that mindset that were just sort of filling time until we get to the serious years, let's say, those kids were really just losing interest. You know, and I think it's going back to this thing, if we're not valuing the faith of children, and perhaps that faith is different to ours, perhaps it's not quite as verbalised as ours, as vocalised, perhaps it's not as, they're not as able to explain what their understanding is of, you know, sin or something like that, but in their way, they have a faith. And so I think if we can value and nurture that faith and encourage our congregations and the parents there to value and nurture that faith for what it is, that's a really helpful thing. And again, as I was saying this morning, I do believe those first sort of 5-6 years are so key. You know, there's so much, so my subject I teach at university is early childhood from an education point of view. And that's, you know, how influential those years are from an education point of view. But from a spiritual point of view, you know, all these things, habits are instilled and knowledge is, you know, passed on, and all these feelings and beliefs and attitudes, that they are imparted into our kids. And whether they are, you know, some people have said to me, oh, we don't want to be too pushy with faith, so we don't really do anything. Well, actually, by doing that, that's the attitude that you're imparting into your kids, you know. So whatever we do as parents, as congregations, we're imparting something into the kids there. And I have not necessarily through choice, but just through locations that I've ended up living in and so on, I've been in quite a few different denominations. And I grew up for about 10 years. I was in a Pentecostal church till I was about 11. And I remember every week in the Sunday evening would be this, you know, the appeal. And every week I'd kind of be, yeah, there putting my hand up and saying goodbye, because I didn't quite know if I'd done enough yet. And there was that, in the church I was in, there was that kind of feeling of, you know, it's got to be, your faith has to be a certain way for it to be acceptable. There was all these testimonies, you know, drug addicts that have been converted and all this kind of thing. And I felt like, because I'd sort of grown up in a Christian home and haven't gone off the rails and that kind of thing, you know, it wasn't a genuine faith. And now I know that's not true. And I want to kind of champion those people who have boring testimonies in a way, because that's, you know, that's a valuable thing in itself. And so I think valuing children's faith for what it is in their personalised way. So it may not look like our faith. It may not look like their sister's faith or another child's faith in the church, but it is a personal thing, so valuing that is really, really key. And this is a kind of a model, if you like, that I've been sort of toying with in my mind. This idea that I think we would probably all agree here that, that there's aspects of faith that we want to grow in children. So things like their knowledge of the Bible, their understanding of certain concepts, their Christian language. What else? Awareness of others, you know, developing that sort of moral sense, moral understanding and so on. And also a context for their faith. So we want them to understand and to learn how the Bible fits into their life, how it fits into daily living and so on. But I also feel like at the same time as that, we want to be kind of treasuring certain aspects and preserving them. So things like trust and a kind of a healthy vulnerability. So, you know, I think often in society we're kind of saying we want these children to grow up and be independent, you know, and we want them to learn to dress themselves all on their own, and we want them to do this on their own and this on their own. And to be independent is this kind of thing. Being independent is a good thing, and of course it is. But we also want to kind of
help individuals to see that there's a need to rely on God. You know, we can't just be independent. And that sense of, actually, children, we want to kind of foster that ability for them to ask for help. You know, I've been quite careful when my kids come and ask for help. I say, oh, well done for asking for help. Because I think, you know, that's a good thing to do. And, you know, if, as Christians, if we recognise we need help, we ask God, don't we? And so I think that's something. And also the sense of living in the moment. I've got a three-year-old boy, and he doesn't conserve his energy. So if he wakes up at 6 a.m, he's full on. You know, he's not thinking, I've got a whole day ahead. I need to just use a little bit of energy now and then a bit for the next time. He doesn't do that, and he's just full on all day. And likewise, it's been great to watch how he doesn't worry really about things that have happened before. So we were on holiday and he fell off his scooter and really badly split his chin. And we were thinking, oh dear, is he not going to want to go on his scooter ever again? Because, you know, he loves his scooter. And the next day, there he was, whizzing off. He didn't even talk about it, you know. And with a great big blaster on his chin. And it's that thing of, actually, the fact that kids can just live in the moment and enjoy the moment. They're not worried about the past or the future. We want to treasure that. You know, we want to kind of preserve that sense. And also that kind of sense of being ready to learn. And wanting to always be pushing the boundaries, pushing the limits of what they can do, and they want to be doing the next thing. You know, so I think there's a lot of things within young children that actually we want to be treasuring. So I think this kind of model, if you like, of doing two things at the same time. So we're trying to sort of preserve what is there innately in a child. You know, God has put these things into a child. But then at the same time, we are, of course, wanting to develop and grow in that way. And I think if we do that kind of approach, I think it enables us to kind of allow the children to be individuals, you know. So we allow them to be individuals in their faith as well. So perhaps a child is incredibly creative, and we can then understand and enable that to be part of their faith and who they are. Rather than pushing faith into a certain direction. So that's just a little thought I'll leave with you there about that. So now we'll go on to think about equipping and empowering parents in that. So we've talked about the community responsibility, we've talked about valuing children's faith as individuals, and now thinking about equipping and empowering parents. When I spoke to the kids in my research, very few of them credited the church or church activities for influencing them very much in their faith. Now, I think it probably did influence them, but they hadn't perhaps realised that, let's say. You know, it wasn't quite as... they weren't as aware of it. But their parents... an extended family, well, what they were talking about all the time, you know. You know, my dad, I've seen him reading his Bible, and you know, that's a really good thing. You know, every morning he gets up and reads his Bible. And in fact, that particular family I'm thinking of, they said to me, "Yes, you know, the dad does this, but Mum, no, she never does." You know, and no, and Mum thinks the Bible's boring, and you know, she doesn't pray. And they do see these things, you know. And so very much parents and family are very influential there. So just kind of, I'll skip to the second one first, because I was just sort of saying that. This thing about kids seeing Bible reading or and prayer and so on. I think, you know, we're all quite, I'm sure, quite diligent in our own, you know, faith activities, but... I think often people are quite, not necessarily private in that, but it's not outwardly visible to kids in the home. So I remember my parents, without fail, would always get up early and go down and sit down and have their devotion times both in separate rooms, and we weren't allowed in, you know. And it was very much kind of, it was a great example to me of them doing that, but I think it would have been nice to have been involved. And I remember when I had my little girl, who's 7 now, and she was sitting there on the changing mats, which is a few months old.
And I remember thinking, I think I prayed something in my head, I can't remember what was happening at the time. And I remember thinking, well, why don't I just pray that out loud? Because then she knows, you know, that I'm praying. And so I've tried, not all the time, but often to kind of, some of those prayers that kind of, you know, in my head, like if there's a bit of a thing going on, a bit of a crisis, you know, say these things out loud so the kids can hear. And, you know, even just on the way to school, perhaps we'll do a quick prayer in the car or something. And I think making the, being a model, modelling our faith outwardly and visibly, is something that is really key for children. And I think this thing of modelling faith, we have to be careful. Somebody was saying yesterday about guilt. You know, we don't want to be making people feel guilty, you know, like, oh, you're a really bad model or anything, or why have you not been a good role model? But we are role models, you know, and actually, I think most parents we meet are great. You know, they're doing a really great job. We're all, you know, I get things wrong all the time. And I get narky and all this kind of thing. And then, I said, when we were on holiday the other week, I was saying, you know, sorry to my daughter, saying, you know, but God's not like that. You know, he doesn't get angry. And kind of trying to model the best I can. We're all doing the best we can. But we want to affirm parents in that and say, you know, you are doing a really great job. You're being a great role model for your kids. And let's empower them in that. So some things I jotted down about role modelling. So things like language and the way of treating others and behaving with others. Being loving. There's a great book here that I'm only halfway through. But it's really, really great, grace-based parenting. And it's just really great, this thing of, like, you know, providing that kind of love and forgiveness and that sense of security and outwardly showing forgiveness and so on to our kids there. And I think having realistic expectations as well. You know, if we can encourage parents, some parents I meet have just such high expectations of their kids in things of faith, and actually it's saying, well, it's okay, you know, just accept kids for who they are, but also expectations of ourselves as parents, you know, to be realistic. You know, we're trying our best. We're never going to be the most perfect ever parent in the world. You never know, some people might, but I won't be. I know that. There's a lovely phrase, one of the psychologists talked about a good enough mother, and I love that, because I think, I'm good enough, you know, I'm never going to be perfect, but good enough. And I think that's the thing, some people are frightened, some parents I meet are a bit frightened, they think, I don't know how to pass my faith onto my kids, so I'm not going to try. But it's that thing of saying, no, you know, you are doing a good job, let's empower people, encourage them, you know, they are good enough, you know, not perfect, but good parents at that, so let's encourage that. So we're going to watch a little video now. Which is about being a model, a role model to kids. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to guilt anybody, but I think it's a really helpful thing, at just kind of like underlining this thing of parents as being role models. Thanks.
Yeah. You don't know it right now, but I'm watching you. Watching the things you do. I'm watching the way you treat people. The way you treat me and my mom and my sister. The way you live your life is having a big impact on me. When it's time for me to choose a career and provide for my family, your work ethic will be on my mind. The time you spend with me, even doing simple things, will give me a sense of security. There will be times in my life where I struggle with integrity. I may be not sure what to do, but I will recall how you stood up for what was right even if you could look the other way. All of the choices you are making, I will also make. Please don't be afraid to show me your failures, to show me your mistakes. I will learn from them. Dad, are you listening? I'm watching. Watching to see if you really believe what you say about God. Won't you help show me the way? Show me how to live life that isn't safe, but is good. So I'm watching you, Dad, every day. You're teaching me how to live, whether you know it or not.
Yes, I think that's quite a moving sort of video, but quite powerful. It's sort of reminding us that parents as role models. So just to go back to there, just to talk about attachment, which connects with this role model thing. So by attachment, I mean kind of the relationship of the parent and child together. And some people have talked about often families following the faith of their parent, of their dad. This is my little research. I'm not claiming that it's the whole answer to the whole world. But when I spoke to quite a few families, it was quite obvious to me that it was the parent that they were closest to was the faith that they were imitating. So there was twins particularly were of interest. And the dad was an atheist and the mum was an incredibly committed Christian and very active and passionate and so on. And the two boys, though, I think they were six, were very, very different in what they were sort of talking to me about their faith and so on. So one couldn't get enough of it and he was talking all about it, telling me all about church, all about the Bible readings he does with his mum, all about prayer times, oh, how much he thinks Jesus loves him and all these kind of things. And then the other boy didn't want to talk at all. He kept walking off. Don't want to talk about this. You know, if I talked about church, oh, I hate going to church. You know, and he said, you know, what about the Bible? Oh, no, I don't like doing that. And one of the activities I was using to help them to explain their relationship with God and so on was little figures and so on. And one of them, he said, oh yeah, this one can be Jesus. I'll throw him over there. You know, we don't want him. And then he went off and got one of his characters, and took the underpants off. And said, look, God's naked, and threw him as well. Just really, really kind of disrespectful and just showed no sense of connecting with God. And I spoke to his mum at the end, and she said, oh, they're very different. She said, you know, in a lot of things, in education and all that kind of thing, they're very similar, and their approach to life is quite similar. They play really well together, all this kind of thing. But in the way of kind of faith, they're so different. And she was sort of saying, I don't understand. And then she said to me, and this boy, the one who's really into faith, I'm so close to him, I spend such a lot of time with him, we get on really, really well, but my other son is really close to his dad. And I just thought it was so obvious. And that happened, I think there was three families where that sort of situation was happening. And it was so obvious to me that kids very much look to the faith of their parents and imitate that. So if we can, as churches, empower and equip them, then that's great. So we're going to spend a few minutes now looking at some resources here. Do you want to? Sorry, skip. Should I skip past there?
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Shall I do that? I'll come back to that. Okay, I'll whiz through there. Some ways that we can give to parents as ideas of things they can do. Everyday talk. So trying to, this idea again of Deuteronomy 6, thinking how can we drop things into everyday living? This is a really great, God Ventures is a website and you can get things on there. So this is a pack of cards. It says for under fives, but to be honest, it would work right up to 8, 9, 10 year olds. And the idea is to just pick a card and do something together as a family. So this one here says, create drums from large plastic boxes and wooden spoon beaters and use them to praise God. This one, decorate gingerbread shapes of people we're thankful for and thank God for them. Draw features onto paper dolls and turn them into people we're thankful for. Hitting balloons around to worship God. There's all sorts of bits, Bible reading. There we go. Challenge everyone to listen and do actions to keywords in the Bible story and that kind of thing. So that, so there's some ideas. There's also quite a few sort of devotionally type books available. This is again God Ventures, but there's quite a few around where families can do this together. So perhaps, you know, realistically, you know, perhaps once a week, pick a day, you know, Sunday afternoon or something, why don't you sit down together and do this little activity? It's a little bit of the Bible to read, something to think about, something to discuss. So those kind of devotion type activities are really great. That's sort of fostering everyday talking. I've got a thing, we have a nice glass bowl at home with these in, but I couldn't bring it on the plane. So I turned it into a paper cup, plastic cup. But we just have some little questions here to sort of pull out and talk about. What's something that's happened to you today that you want to thank God for? You know, we do this at the dinner table, and the kids love it, you know, oh, let me pick one out, let me pick one out. It's a mix of things. So who do you admire and why? And other things like that. You could perhaps do that with Bible verses, you know, put some special Bible verses in a bowl and just pull one out every day at breakfast, that kind of thing. We've also done, Graham's brought the Jesus Storyteller Bible. I can't see just. Oh, it's not there. And but that's really good. We read sometimes a little bit at breakfast. Well, we don't so much now. We did it for about 6 months every morning at breakfast. Now it's fizzled out, we're doing something else instead. And that's got a CD with it as well. David Suchet has narrated it, and my daughter loves listening to that in the car on journey. So I think this thing of everyday talk, hot topics, some parents were saying to me that, you know, kids ask difficult questions about God and faith and so on. And they said, you know, when they ask the question, I'm so unprepared for it. I don't know what the answer is. And then the next day or a few days later, I've had time to think about it. And then I wish I could go back to the child and say it, but they're not interested anymore. And so this thing, I thought, you know, churches could perhaps facilitate, you know, let's make a list of difficult questions that kids might ask and discuss it perhaps in a home group or, you know, just facilitating families, you know, to think about it in advance. Or perhaps, you know, a mum and dad to talk about it. Let's discuss these. How would we answer this question? I've got a list here, you know, who made God? Where does God live? How do I get to God? You know, these kind of things. If we can enable parents to think about them in advance, then they would be perhaps a bit more ready to answer when it comes up. Family worship ideas. Again, there's this book Together with God, but there's other things there. But perhaps we could suggest some of these things to families. And encouraging families to use these things in partnership with their daily life, sort of discussion, faith, prayer, and Bible reading, and so on. Great. So I'll hand over to Graham for some more ideas.
There's
Oops. Do you want it on? Yeah. Okay.
There's an ant plant, ant span, ant span, jam tram, man, boy, girl, cheese fan. There's a car, spa, tar, bar, art, bark, hard, bark, shot, dog, pop, walk, love. God made everything you see. He made you and he made me. It's a life.
clips are taken from this resource. Some of us were at a conference in January and we were given out a sampler of this. Guy's called Awesome Cutlery, featuring Captain Awesomeness and Cutlery Boy. The humour is just brilliant, but what I loved about it, because I kind of gave it to my daughter and she wouldn't give it back because she loved it so much, because you saw a sample of the songs, but the gospel truth in these is amazing, because she was able to have conversations about... there was one about trusting God and compared it to like a mountain trying to brush its teeth or a potato trying to swim. Ridiculous humour, but again making the point, if we try to live God without trusting God, without prayer, it's a nonsense, you know, and we were to have conversations about it. What they then did, coming up to the summer, these guys have produced this series of family devotionals, which each one is based, there's two per song, and I thought, well, okay, let's go. It worked really well. On the journey, my journey to school in the morning with the kids, put on the song, throw this in the back, and they take it in turns, and there's like a prayer, a little exercise, a Bible verse to read, a discussion, some questions. And some of the conversations we have, which I'm not really ready for at 8:30 in the morning, that's to be said, but just were such an encouragement to my heart. And things that you might think, you'd never get a 6 and an 8-year-old to talk about these things, but they do. And I've had some contact with these guys, and one's a Bible college student, and one's a youth pastor, and they just want to resource parents to do the sort of stuff that we've been talking about here. I have a few of these on for sale. Yeah, if those of you who are in and around Belfast, there's some in Evangelical Bookshop, or you saw the address there, awesomecutlery.com, you can order them. You want to just, that's something you can put in the hands of a parent who has never done anything and doesn't know where to begin. And I know some friends have sent these all around the world to people. The other one that I think is very popular, these ones here, Slugs and Bugs, which, I mean, musically, those guys are great, but this is done by a sort of professional full-time musician, Randall Goodgame. I don't know why Americans all have funny names. But, but it's, again, brilliant Bible teaching, but it's setting scripture verses to song. And I mean, I now know the books of the Bible because I know a song. And there's lots of other memory verses and things that are sticking in my head and sticking in the head of my kids. And again, something got dead easy because you can put them in the car, non-threatening, but very helpful. I'm going to run through just a few resources very quickly. I want to mention this is something that we've been giving out for a little while. Just a simple thing to give to you as a church. We can also give it to parents. Resources for Christian families, and in there there's different sections depending on the age of kids, worship material or books for parents to read about parenting or books for churches to think about how they support parents. What we're going to do is expand this and put in some of the stuff that Sarah has mentioned, and then this is going to be emailed out with the link for the resources or the seminar stuff and so on. So you'll get a copy of that, which you're welcome to then print out and give out or just use or whatever. So if you're thinking, I'll not be able to take in all these resources, that's okay. They're also all on the Close to Home page of the Presbyterian Ireland website, and we're going to keep that updated, trying to put on some of the ideas that you've been giving out. And because we see this just as an ongoing project, we as a council want to resource you as you try to resource parents, and there's new stuff coming out all the time. So just to mention a few things here, some family devotions. If you have a family that just wants to start, a lot of people start with something like the Jesus Storybook Bible, which has become very popular, or this one here, the Big Picture Story Bible, which is based around the principle of God's people in God's place under God's rule and blessing. So just as the Jesus Storybook Bible finds Jesus in every story of Scripture, this helps kids get the idea of we are God's people in God's place under God's rule and blessing. What does that mean? And I found it really helpful. Well, I honestly think any age, I mean, I think you could use it with quite young children, because the pictures are really good. You know, there's not a lot of words on the page. You can read it. So before kids are able to read, you can read it to them. But as they get older, they can read it as their reading age improves. But I think you could use it to quite old kids. I think you could also use it within the church. I've been to a couple of churches and used this with the kids in a church. There's also this little question and answer thing that goes with it. It's a sort of a catechism type thing. So again, different resources. And then for families who have been doing this and want something a bit deeper, there's all sorts of things like this one here, which is proof parrots, taking themes and doctrine. I think, can't teach doctrine to kids? Well, yes, you can if you do it really well. And this has Bible teaching and fun activities like building a pirate ship and all kinds of stuff that goes with it. So again, recognizing that your context is different, that families are different, there are all kinds of things in family worship. One of the best things we've come across recently, these guys, Ed McKenzie and Gareth Crispin, that Sarah's referred to, went and visited a number of families and just talked to them, what do you do in family worship? To try and get the message across, family worship is not this deep, mysterious and mystical thing that only super holy Christian families do. It's something that every Christian family can do. And they just captured their stories. There's two Northern Ireland families in here. This is a kind of book you could make available or put in the hands of parents who are thinking about this. And I think, unfortunately, upstairs weren't able to get this, but again, you can get it from their website. Have a look later on, and Evangelical Bookshop have a few of those. Let me just mention a couple more things quickly. For those, there are not a lot of resources for parents of teenagers, and particularly if they haven't done much with their kids or you know, when they were younger. But parents of teenagers are often crying out for some help. So there's books like this one by Chap Clark, Disconnected, or Paul Tripp book, Age of Opportunity, that are great for parents of teenagers who are just going, I don't understand my child anymore, things are going fine, and then they become this adolescent who doesn't speak to me anymore and is engaged differently in church or not at all in church. And books like that that will really help parents to understand their kids a bit more. Or books that you can give that I think are really helpful. Paul Tripp's Parenting, 14 Gospel-Centered Principles, or Gospel-Centered Family by Tim Chester, that again give ideas to parents about what's the culture you're developing within your home. So for instance, talking to children, instead of when a child says, I'm really sorry, saying it's okay, saying, I forgive you. Again, you were talking about language, Sarah, and I think you know that sort of thing, because the gospel is, it's not okay, but you're forgiven because of Jesus, you know, and simple things like that make a difference. And how do we, you know, do we love one another within our families? Do we really forgive one another? Last thing to mention, because I forgot the last time when Nikki Gentry was here, is the family worker in Knock who does a lot of this, Faith at Home. It's a program where you can directly resource parents of different ages of kids during the church year. If you're interested in that, and you know who Nikki is, she's always delighted to talk to folks about that. But again, it's just about giving simple resources to parents at different ages and stages that will help them nurture faith with them at home. Just a few things. Come and have a look at these afterwards.
Great. Super, thank you. And then a few other kind of practical ideas we could give to parents. Things like worship music in the car, adult worship music or kids stuff as well. Mine loved that. I didn't realise quite how much until I left the CD. We had a car service and I took all the CDs out and then we didn't have them. Like, we want the music, we want the church songs, as they called them. We want them. And they've picked up quite a lot of my favourite worship songs, because they've just been on in the car and they often sing them now around the house, which is quite nice. And also in the kitchen, I enjoy them. But, you know, anywhere, this kind of thing of having around the home, praying outwardly, I've already spoken about that. And making our faith outwardly visible. So like Graham was saying, you know, if things happen that we do need to be sorry for, then saying that outwardly for our kids to see. Choosing to notice, value and appreciate things that the kids do, you know, that are good in terms of faith-wise, but also behaviour-wise. And also, I just think in everyday life, I just love kind of coasts and nature and all that kind of thing. And even yesterday morning, I was like trying to hunt out, like, you know, where's a little green space? And I found a nice tree and whatnot. And I love to go to places like that. And so whenever I go with the kids, you know, I say, oh, wow. Thank you, you know, out loud, thank you, God, for this beautiful world you've made for us. Or, you know, even if you hear birds singing, you know, thank you, God, that's just so beautiful. And so that the kids can hear that kind of expression and deliberately kind of doing that and noticing. Building discussion opportunities so that we don't wait till suddenly a child wants to discuss with you, you know, what about... let's say, what about, you know, another faith? How do we know our God is true, or something like that? You know, why don't trying to have discussion openly about faith issues in an everyday way, so that when things like that do come up, it's not like, oh my goodness, you know, we've never talked about God at home, I don't even know what to say. But trying to have discussion is an open and kind of frequent sort of thing. Being open and honest. So, you know, if we don't know the answer, we can just say that. You know, I don't know. You know, I've said that, you know, I don't really know some of these answers to these questions that I'm getting, but we discuss them a bit and so on together. With that, actually, sorry, open and honest. My daughter, who's 7, has suddenly started asking questions that need a long answer. You know, it's not like I can't just like quickly give an answer. And I think that that's important to, sorry, it's the windows keep opening and closing according to the temperature, that's what people are wondering. Yeah, I think allowing time and space to answer questions properly, to respect our kids enough that we actually take time to give them the proper full answer about these things. To relate faith to the individual and the personal, so not this, you know, one size fits all, we've got one exact prototype of how faith should look like. But again, respecting and valuing our kids for the individuals for who they are. And if we can communicate that to parents in our churches. And being prepared at all times. Usually it's bedtime, or like a time when you're like really at the end of your tether. Suddenly there's this like really amazing spiritual moment happens. And so I think that thing of encouraging parents to be kind of aware and prepared at all times. And then one thing which is, again, really, really key, I think, going back to the Deuteronomy thing, is this thing of instilling habits. And again, like I said, particularly the early years are so key. But, you know, all years, you know, even teenagers, you know, if we can try and facilitate habits to be formed even then. So I think I mentioned this morning, have you prayed about it? My parents, that was the constant mantra of my upbringing. So whenever anything happened that was tricky, they would say, have you prayed about it? And it was the most irritating thing ever, because I didn't want them to say that. I wanted them to either pray for it themselves or fix it for me, you know? But they said this, you know, have you prayed about it? And still now, me and my brother and sister joke about this, because we have this voice in our head, you know, when things go on, you know, well, have you prayed about it? And we can't get it out. But that's a habit, you know, that's been formed because my parents said that frequently. So if we can foster that sense of instilling that kind of idea. Long journeys, we often pray against something my parents did. I do it with my kids, you know, heading off on the journey, you know, we'll pray for the journey, for God to keep us safe, for it to go well, and various things. And the kids love that. And sometimes now, if I forget for the first minute or two, they say, no, hang on, we need to pray, you know. And that's really great. On the way to school, some people, I was saying yesterday, some people have longer drives to school, and so some people should walk and go in the car like me. But we have just quite a short drive to school, and so but I always try and, you know, make sure we say a little prayer out loud together. And sometimes the kids chip in. Oh well, you know, when I've got my dance class today, make sure we pray for that too. You know, just capturing a few minutes of time that we can use. Or if you have a longer journey, perhaps using one of these devotional type things in the car. Like Graham does. Worshipping in the car, talked about. And prayer at mealtimes and bedtimes. I think it's something which perhaps in previous times was more prevalent. But if we can try and regain that within families, it's a really, really positive thing. And family worship times, again, we've spoke about that. There's some resources here. Perhaps just once a week, every few weeks even, you know, gathering the family and just spending a little bit of time together. Bible reading in various different forms. As I say, we read one of the Bibles for about 6 months at breakfast time, or other times we've kind of done like a Sunday afternoon snuggle. We'll get the duvets and get the Bible out and read some bits together and talk about them. So different things like that. I think Christmas and festivals like that are really great opportunities to do things. So we have, on Christmas Eve, we always have a birthday party for Jesus, and we make a cake and have a little thing and so on and celebrate, and the kids always act out
you know, the Christmas story for us. The cousins often come round and they all get dressed up, and it's kind of escalating the drama of the story over the years. But, you know, things like this, just again to kind of remind them what the whole thing is about, and using those sort of special festivals, maybe, you know, and calendars and things. So, what should we do for time now? Okay, we've got a bit of time. So, we'll do this last slide and then have a little time. Oh, special meals as well. So, I think this thing of instilling habits and encouraging the families in our churches to instill these habits is a really, really valuable thing. But then, alongside that space for spiritual expression, and I hold my hands up to this, I have very little space in my life, and I'm dashing around to different things, and I'm probably the worst person at doing this, but trying to not kind of overfill our time and overprogram family life, and I'm always trying to like tell myself, you know, don't rush the kids to do this, don't, you know, where we can take a bit of time to kind of have that time, because I think this practice of stillness, so kind of having times of spiritual stillness, is really important. And I think the danger of our kind of society with this fast, 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 on the go all the time is that thing that we're not actually just allowing time for stillness and for spiritual kind of calm times and things. So even just building in occasionally little pockets of quiet and time and space is an incredibly powerful thing. And trying to create windows of opportunity there as well. You know, perhaps sitting down and saying, you know, well, should we pray about this together, and let's see what God can do and things like that. Verbalising and explaining experiences. So perhaps if something has happened that the kids don't understand, you know, talking about that together. Being open and overcoming fear. Sometimes I think we're a bit cautious about involving children in, you know, let's say praying for someone to get better or something like that, because you think, well, what will happen, you know, if it doesn't, you know, or things like that. But let's not let that stop us involving kids in spiritual experiences and spiritual encounters. Great, so that was that's that. But I thought it'd be really good just to give you a few minutes to, hopefully, a few little things have sparked up in your mind, but to give you a few minutes to discuss which bits might apply to your setting and which bits you could capture, how you could tailor things a little bit, and discuss that in your groups, and perhaps we'll have a little bit of feedback of that, but also some questions. We've left time for questions as well, or comments, or just observations, or examples of good practice, or anything. So we'll give you about 3 minutes to kind of discuss, kind of in a way of like capturing something that's sparked in your mind so that you can capture that and take it home with you. So discuss what's kind of sparked in your mind or any questions you may have, and then we'll have a bit of feedback together. Okay. Great. Great. Sorry to break into your discussions again. But are there any kind of comments, anything that's really jumped out to you, or any questions, or any observations, or any other examples of good practice that you could share? Anything at all?
Well, one of the things you mentioned just in passing was God can speak when we can't. And you happened to mention when you're out for a walk looking at nature. I use that with my own children. Mm-hmm. With us. I'm fortunate. We walk Port Stewart Beach there. And mm-hmm. And it's down by the seaside, and it's absolutely beautiful, particularly this time of the year. You'll see the gannets diving for the fry in the bay. Mm-hmm. And a lot of you may not be aware of this, but the gannet, just before it hits the water, has a wee inflatable ring around its neck. It actually inflates it so that its neck doesn't break as it hits the water. It goes on the fish. Mm-hmm. So I often say to get the kids thinking, because they're getting evolution, evolution, mm-hmm. evolution, evolution pumped out. How did evolution create that?
Mm-hmm.
That cannot be. Or teasing out a wee bit further, you get them, then they get some thinking, you get the, now this is more for the older children, teenagers, maybe 10 years out, age upwards, mm-hmm. but we're being pumped, evolution is the truth. in all our schools nowadays to learn. And, you know, the teachers are forced to teach it, and it's only a theory.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say to the kids, that once you get them thinking a wee bit, you just say, tell me another thing. How do you create something out of nothing?
Mm.
You can't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. basic thoughts like that, but they've never been taught to think around school.
Yeah.
They're fed that the survival of the fittest.
Mm.
Well, survival of the fittest, we're looking, of course, the wee firecrest birds fly in from Iceland.
Okay.
Amazing wee birds of the size of your hand, and they nest in the sandhills in Portstewart. But they are so beautifully marked and beautifully coloured.
Mm.
Now, if that was survival of the fittest, they would be dull so that they could hide in the hedges and all, things like that. But no, they're not. The lovely wee crests and all, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that goes totally against
absolutely.
Theory.
And even before that, before they get to that stage, the kids, you know, I often say to them, like, you know, if they cut their knee or something and then they get a scab and they have this only, but like, well, God's designed our body so well so that it will close up. The scab is stopping you from keeping bleeding. You know, and things like that. So even before we get to the evolution thing, you know, we can celebrate how God's designed our bodies or creation or whatever. Yeah, so that's a really good point. Thank you.
So that, to me, I find is very useful. It's got my own kids thinking about it and realising there is a creator God.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? Connecting that, what they're experiencing there with faith.
The big problem I see is parents, it's a busy world and parents very often don't have the time to sit down and talk to their kids. You really do need to make time.
And even capturing time on car journeys. Super, thank you for that.
I just wanted to throw this out here. The relationship between parents and grandparents. Because it seems, I know in Northern Ireland, grandparents have a huge role now. That both parents are working. I don't know whether the relationship between Christian and grandparents and the parents and the children in that doing this type of thing is using the same resources. In other words, the children are almost getting what the parents would like them to have. And sometimes grandparents have ideas. Maybe they care about the home. Maybe they're doing something else.
Yeah.
So I just wondered, have you any way that, you know, as well as, like in church, I could probably go to the same church. Grandparents as well. You know, is there a role for them?
Absolutely. I haven't really mentioned grandparents at all, but thank you for that. I did an evening once for grandparents on this whole thing, and it was really well attended and really great. And I guess the best case scenario is that grandparents and the parents are of the same mind, faith-wise, isn't it? You know, and that's brilliant, isn't it, for the kids? You know, if this kind of thing can be reinforced, you know, that's fantastic. I was talking to some grandparents who are very frustrated because their children don't allow them to do faith things with their grandchildren, which is really hard, and that's a real tough one, isn't it? But absolutely, if grandparents are in the position to be able to reinforce this, that's so powerful and so amazing, isn't it? Yeah. So thank you for raising that. That's really great. Yes.
You just reminded me that we used to have a church bookstall in a church, and we'd run it every so often. And you know, most of the religious bookshops will lend you books and say they're returned.
Yes.
The way you brought resources to us. That's a way of, you know, I was surprised. I used to work in bookshops, and I always loved going into bookshops. But you realise a lot of families aren't used to doing that, and a lot, and how religious books for children have changed over the years, and the selection now is fantastic. You used to be able to spot a religious book a mile off, you know, it wasn't, you know, they weren't great,
not
but
quite
now
good,
they're lovely ones. And by, you know, letting parents see what's available and encouraging them and making them realise there's so many really good children's Bibles for very young children as well.
Yeah, that's a really
that's
good point. Yeah, that's great, because it's quite a big thing. Even I know myself personally, to order a book off the internet that you haven't quite seen, and if you haven't got time to go into a bookshop and browse like that, so absolutely brilliant idea. Yeah,
or even going into a bookshop, you could be quite overwhelmed.
Yes,
whereas if you could be selected,
yes,
you know, from
a particularly
list of
good
resources,
ones.
That
yeah,
Ian's talking about,
and
that would be good.
Yeah. between parents.
Yeah.
Like, well, I find that really good.
Great idea, I might do that myself.
You mentioned something earlier, actually, which I'm going to take on board. Is at the start of our year, our Sunday school teachers all get together, we plan our, what we're going to teach. And we always have a, maybe a get-together with the parents, and we're trying to get them all together just for a fun time. But you said about giving the programme of events to the future plan to the parents. So I think that's actually
yeah,
a
that
good
was
idea.
Did you say you do? Yeah, I think that's great.
Very good.
Yeah.
To get that, let them know what we're going to teach in advance, and say, because some of the families actually, some of the parents might not have a grasp of the story, so if they would want to come along and ask any questions, so even maybe discuss it with the minister rather than us, because they're more comfortable with that.
Yeah.
You know, to suggest that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I love this idea of the
rhymes, you know, even some of these little kids' songs that we do in church, the parents may not know, but again, if we could send them home somehow, you know, and then they can sing them together,
I
you know,
that
that's
idea.
Yeah. And it's great because that's communicating that partnership with parents, but also, you know, those little things they're doing, they may do at home then as well. So that's great. Super. Thank you for sharing that. Any other bits? I'm aware that people might be on the 5:30 tea sitting. any other bits?
Yep, sorry.
So that, I don't know if everybody could hear that, that's about sort of everyday kind of bringing things and living out our faith rather than it just being a kind of
One of the things that we've really just started this past 6 months or a year, church, which we find helpful, is to make the young people feel inclusive in church. And one of the things we've done is, and rather than just the elders or the committee members handing out the tracts coming into the church and welcoming the people, we make sure the children are totally involved with that. And it's great. The kids absolutely love it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's even a game for them. And of course, then there's the regulars that come to the church that get to know the children, and next thing they're pretending box and and it's just lovely to watch that interaction of them, and the kids look forward to coming to the church. And if they look forward to coming to church, they're actually saying to their parents, "Mum and Dad, I want to go to church today."
Yeah, that's it. I mean,
I'm bringing Mum and Dad kicking and screaming to church rather than all the way around.
A good one we had, we sent the kids around with the offering bag.
Yeah.
And sometimes they stand up.
That definitely
that's a tough shift. Anyone else bursting, or should we finish there? I think time's up, super. Great, well, thank you so much, but do mill around, feel free to look at the resources, and thank you, that's really great.